So there's a sweet story about an elephant who is walking along, minding his own business one day, when he comes across a hummingbird lying on its back with its little feet pointed straight up in the sky. "Why are you lying there like that?" the elephant asks. "I heard that the sky might fall today, and so I'm ready to help hold it up if it does." Do you really think that those tiny feet could help hold up the sky? Asked the elephant, making a bit of fun of the hummingbird, to be honest. "Well, maybe not alone, but each must do what they can, and this is what I can do." I read a note by blogger Jared Kintz the other day. "When it seems like the sky is about to collapse, relax. That's just the roof caving in." Maybe not such a funny comment sitting in a 115-year-old stone church building that has had its share of leaky moments, I understand. Don't worry, it's fine. But it's all about perspective, right? How big a picture are we seeing of any given circumstance? What's the view for today's sermon from the balcony, for example? And how does that affect our ability to choose a response? For many years now, as you heard Joel mention earlier from the minutes, the survival of this congregation has been a function of addressing the physical needs of its home, not exclusively, of course, but to a large degree. You who have been here through the thick and the thin of it know far better than I how much of your sweat and tears and resources have gone into this recuperation. Just last week, as we mentioned last Sunday, the scaffolding was taken down on the most recent improvements to the south wall. The windows will be repaired in the spring. And while there will always be a punch list of projects to attend to, a big bulk of the structural issues that needed attention have been addressed. Congratulations. Good job. Good job. After the service on February 8th, we'll have some of what Karen Bishop describes as admire time. Right? To officially close out the Capitol campaign and to appreciate all that you have accomplished here. Like the hummingbird, I suspect each of you have done all you could do. And look, you kept the sky from falling. Or at least the sky in this particular sanctuary. Are we done? No, not exactly. I've been reading comments and reports about the things that we know are important going forward, the need for handicap accessibility, for better space for our children and youth, and a place for community gatherings, and by the way, for a bigger and more hospitable minister's office. There were innumerable suggestions for how that space might look and serve us all better. One comment in particular made me laugh. "I may be confusing the minister's office with the administrator's office," this comment said. "I don't know where the administrator's office is. I think there's another office in back of the bathroom, but I've never been in there." So we know the work is not entirely done. One response to the question of future space needs was, "Nothing you don't know." Okay, that has been your task, your compelling work for many years. And while supporting each other and learning together and being a growing family, you have been rebuilding your home. It has been front and center in your lives. This attending to the urgent phenomenon isn't just a congregational thing, though, right? even in our individual lives. There are times when the imminent things, when today's challenges, demand the most attention of us. It's hard, for example, to plan retirement if you don't have a job. Or it's hard to imagine a trip to anywhere when every penny you have is going into today's needs. There may be stretches of time, sometimes years, when we find we don't so much plan our lives as react to them. I'll think about X when I finish my degree, or I'll plan Y when the kids are older. It's not much of a balcony view, but there can be entire years when that's about as much bandwidth as we can muster. It's not that we don't dream or wonder, but that the needs of the day are greater, and it's not yet time to respond to those imaginings, to really shape them and put a name to what they might represent. Travel, or a new home, or a new career. Something else comes first. But now, here, for this congregation perhaps, the sky feels at least somewhat safely in place. The walls are repaired. New furnaces have been installed. The roof is solid for the most part. Now, maybe, is the time we could back up and take a look, take a moment. Now is when we can look from those high up seats in the balcony where you get to see the big view, and we can ask ourselves, after the labored work, what of our dreams? What inspires who we are now that the imminent things are not so dire? Now that we have the luxury, and it is a luxury, to be in a safe space, if not a perfect space, so that now we can take a moment and plan. That's what we've been doing in our standing committee meetings, at least for a portion of the time. We've been looking at the longer term, culling from the various reports that you have all compiled together over the last series of years, and thinking about what might make a cohesive vision around which to prioritize. As the Standing Committee minutes reported, we wanted to articulate a vision for our future that will identify key priorities and inform how we should allocate our resources, human and financial. According to a book called The Open Door by Congregational Consultant Peter Stenke, these are the riveting books that you get to read in the practice of ministry. Vision statements in most churches remain vague, little known, and virtually meaningless because they have never been actively considered or internalized. After culling through and reading the variations of dreams that you have articulated for yourselves in the reports that Joel mentioned, I join the Standing Committee in offering to this community a vision for our future that is articulated by the words, reaching in, reaching out. Reaching in, reaching out. I will warn you that the acronym does not flow off the tongue. Think about it. Re-ro, ri-ro. Let's stick with the words, reaching in, reaching out. Now, the Standing Committee and I are not advertising mavens or public relations specialists, but a group of caring and thoughtful leaders who absorbed your ideas and your thoughts and fashioned them into a vision for our decision-making as we go forward together. The order of the words is no mistake. We noted the energy around the ideas of participating in the broader Unitarian Universalist world and reaching out to the surrounding community, not to mention reaching out to invite others in, adults, children, youth, all people. But this is our individual challenge as well. When we reach out before we have considered what we might be reaching out with, we risk a stumble. We wouldn't go for a job interview, for example, without discerning first what skill we had to offer. We wouldn't buy a house with knowing our capacity to afford it. We wouldn't jump into a new relationship without first having a sense of our own ability to give. Well, sometimes we do that last one, but probably it's not a good idea. All religious traditions remind us to look for the voice within to inspire our ability to reach out with openness. The prophet Elijah reminds us in 1 Kings, for example, that the spirit of life that many call God is not in the wind, nor the earthquake, nor the fire, but in the still, small voice within. The Buddha reminds us to come to the table with an empty cup, an open mind, an open heart. You may know the parable of the master who meets with the student and pours the teacup to overflowing to represent that the mind that comes to the table already filled has little to learn. An empty cup requires self-awareness, reaching in. Our Muslim brothers suggest learn the art of listening as you learn the art of speaking. To listen is an act of discernment. And Emerson offers a timeless directive, what am I and what is, asks the human spirit with a curiosity new kindled but never to be quenched. I would study, I would know, I would admire forever. We reach in with the art of the listener to learn of ourselves and to discern what we each have to offer the world. In some respects, we have this opportunity every day. We wake up, we see the day before us, and we respond, if only unconsciously, as to how we will greet it. But how much more could we be present to our lives like our fishmongers if we looked first and then chose to step out of bed with caution or enthusiasm, with reserve or with abandon? Either way, with awareness. As a congregation, the vision we are offering is to do the same, reaching in, each of us and all of us, not to our pockets necessarily, but to our hearts, to learn of ourselves and to discern what we can offer the world, to challenge ourselves and to ask, again, like our fisher people, how bold can we be? Though with a different goal in mind, since they were a business, we remember that our fish people set the intention to be known around the world that preceded their creativity. An unlikely thought for a small, struggling business. And yet, we learn from that creativity and that joie de vivre. So we begin by reaching in because we know, because you have said, you have recognized that you want to be reaching out as well. Reaching out is where we impact the world, where we share what we know we have to offer, and we engage in healing its wounds, which are so many. In a book, another one of those stellar tomes I've been reading on funding church life, authors Timothy Dombeck and Michael Doral encourage us to define the journey upon which the congregation is embarked. When we know what it is we want to be doing, the funding follows. This is our journey, reaching in, reaching out, over and over again, in a constant and intentional cycle of discovery and sharing. Anything we choose to do should respond to that vision of ourselves. Who are you, Theodore Parker Church? We are people who are in a constant state of reaching in that allows us and emboldens us to be reaching out. Einstein maintained that imagination was more important than knowledge. This vision gives us the opportunity to imagine our way into an exciting and meaningful time together. To imagine and act on the belief that we, members and friends of this beautiful, historic, and tenacious congregation, have important things to offer children, important things to offer youth and adults, other creatures, the earth, the world around us. We have love to offer. We have joy, hope, and strength. We have music and beauty. We have compassion, and we have the desire for justice in the world. The question will be what each one of us brings to this effort and how we will design it and resource it together. Now, I can only imagine you have a few reactions to this idea. So we have provided, as you may have noticed, a sticky note on each of your orders of service. You may use it as you choose, as a reminder to yourself, as feedback on whatever you want to give feedback on, as an offer of energy or service that you want to put forward. This vision has come from you, from your thoughts and your writings and your surveys and your studies. It must continue to do so, which is why you have this invitation. This is our polity and our strength. This sticky note is your opportunity. There will be more opportunities in upcoming weeks to be in conversation about this, specifically after the service on January 25th. And you should know that a member of the Standing Committee plans to attend each of the committee meetings in the month of February so that we can talk more about this idea and how it can inform our decision-making going forward. This week alone, and not as an exception but yet another, reminds us how hard it can be, this life, how confusing and frustrating and sad and tragic. We must know in our hearts that we have what Minister Paul Nixon calls the passionate conviction that we offer something that will renew human lives and communities, and that we are in this particular place and moment for a reason. Reaching in, we find it. In our conversation together, we frame it. Maybe it looks like funding for new space. Maybe it looks like creating new music or experimenting with worship. Maybe it looks like a new way of welcoming new families. But we find it by reaching in within ourselves and with each other, and we serve the world by reaching out. I want to close with a poem by Samuel Green from a book called The Grace of Necessity. It's called October 18, New York City. On the subway, an old Polish man takes me in charge, rides two stops past his own to make certain I find the right place to get off. When I try to thank him, he shakes his head. No, forget it. No one, he says, should be lost when someone else knows the way. Let's be reaching in and find that way together. Let's be reaching out to share it over and over again. That's what we see from the balcony, and it feels like it makes the whole play worthwhile. So may it be. And amen.